And yes, it is good to carry your Bell and Dodgy around with you all the time, actually. So if you can't quite fit it in your handbag or your man bag, then you can take a photo. Okay, so let's just do a very short setting our motivation. Let's just settle our posture and take a couple of deep breaths. And as you breathe out, let go all the busyness of the day. Become present in the room, put down the busyness of the week, and take up again our deep purpose for living, to purify all of our negativities and to bring forth all of our qualities so that we can, as quickly as possible, become enlightened, so we can perfectly help all the struggling and suffering sentient beings. And while this might seem a very daunting task, we do have a plan, and we have a plan that so many others have followed before and achieved success, become enlightened, and continue to benefit others. So we can follow in their amazing footsteps. So His Holiness's prayer to generate bodhicitta: with the wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. All right, so. Does anyone have any questions that have come up about the practice or anything that you'd like to share? Or you've come unstuck? Okay, tell me about how. At all? Not even one? Yeah. So you've run out of steam. You kind of run out of steam. But have you done managed to do one each day? Nearly. It's a big stretch. It's a big stretch. Yeah, so this is kind of how many months since Geshe-la's been here? July, August, September. So 3 months. It's like the 3 month mark. So this is like if we were having a relationship, this is the end of the honeymoon period. So it kind of makes sense. This is where we run out of steam. And now we're really back on our own resources because we've been going with the momentum of the guru and the inspiration of the guru and the environment of the guru. And so we've been kind of enjoying that and using that. But then we use it up. If you've broken the momentum by skipping a day or missing a day, and you can top it up and redo it, then do it. Yes, for sure. Whenever you can. Yep. So, but it is a natural thing, this ebb and flow. And so it's hard because when the guru's here, we have this inspiration to practice and we love practicing and it's enjoyable. And so then we have to learn how to do that ourselves. And you can't get at it through feeling bad or guilty. That will not work. Because then what happens is you have no energy, you don't do your practice, and you feel bad. And then it just becomes entrenched, and then it becomes a ditch. And here you are in the ditch, walking in the ditch. Oh, yeah, tomorrow we'll do the magnificent thing. Yeah, that's right. So you can still aspire to do the magnificent thing. But it's because we have to manufacture that environment now. We've got to, like, the guru connected us with that environment, but now we have to keep servicing it and turning the lights on and putting in the energy ourselves. And so we only realize that when the whole thing comes to a shuddering stop. That's right. So, number one, don't feel guilty or bad about it. It's a natural ebb and flow. But you just start again. That's right. It's like, how many times do you go for your driving lesson, your driving test? Like, very rarely people get on the first go. The other thing is that to get back on the wagon doesn't come, it won't work from feeling bad. You have to re-inspire yourself. You can't do it through gritted teeth, or it's got to come from a really nice place. So one way to inspire yourself, I would suggest, is reading Lama Yeshe's book, Becoming Vajrasattva. Have you got that?
No.
It's really good. I haven't read a book in years, but I decided I was going to read a book. So I went to Longreach to read a book. And it worked.
Oh, that's
No, in the 42 degree heat hotel room, I thought, I'm not turning the television on, I'm going to read a book. So I sat there with a wet towel on my head in the air conditioning. But it's really accessible and it's inspiring. You know, the way Lama Yeshe writes is you naturally want to practice. That's what he does. So that's the one you should read. The first part of the book is about those two sadhanas that we're doing over that really short retreat. So he
yes.
just explains those. So we're already familiar with it. It's really nice explanations of those sadhanas. Then there's some advice for retreat that I was telling Stefan about that's really good about our approach. Really clear. Cuts through all of the kind of the ritual and the expectations and just it gets straight to the point. So anyone who I was actually going to talk about that tonight, anyone who wants to do a retreat, that would be the book that would be your in the breaks reading. Because it's Lamrim and it's wisdom and it's humorous and it's also exactly about the practice. Yeah, so you're not the only one that's fallen off. There's a few other people that have texted me about a week after falling off the wagon to say, oh God, is all lost? And I'm like, no, all is not lost. And in fact, Lama Yeshe talked about that very thing in the book about you go to a Lamrim course, or even in the monasteries, someone who was teaching who had realizations would teach the Lamrim, and everyone would just get up and they'd just run to the mountains, to the caves, to meditate in the caves. And then over the space of about 3 or 4 days to about a week, everybody would come back again. It's hard meditating in the caves. But they were that inspired, you know, at the beginning. So even there, they have the ebb and flow. So whatever you do, I mean, after my bout of food poisoning and realizing how it's so easy to just to stretch that commitment so very very thin, and so no matter what, just do it as you're waking up before you get out of bed. Say one mantra, and if you want seven, but just do that. Don't start the day without it. Just one. Just yell it out, and then that's the thinnest, very barest minimum, but it's there. So the connection is still there. Well, we're supposed to be doing the middle of the night ones and the nighttime ones, but actually reading back on the notes, Geshla did say try and do two sessions, a morning one and a night for our retreat, not as part of the commitment, but actually it's easier that way because then if the day goes pear-shaped, you've at least got the morning one. Yeah. So this is what we're learning. So we're just learning the extent of the strength of our refuge, the strength of our connection to the Dharma. It can be really shocking if you discover that your connection's really weak and that it just takes a few things in our environment to change and we lose our refuge, we lose our connection. So count that as also a teaching from Vajrasattva. It's part of the process. Yeah, so being connected is that's like a result, right? That's a result of the past. But part of the practice of Tantra is part of the ingredients is continuity. So we have a formula how to actually get there. And so the continuity every day means that connection doesn't break. Even it might get really, really thin, but there's ways to repair it. So Geshe-la was saying, like with the six session guru yoga, you know, there's ways to repair it. And depending on the severity of the break. So there's always ways to repair it and to strengthen that connection. But we have to do it. We can't wait for that to happen. We have to build that ourselves. No, so that's why we're going to have a few more retreats. Yeah. So I have edited the sound files from our retreat and put them all up online so that if people want to do their own retreats and you want to have a guided meditation, it's all there. but it's got all the different visualizations. And so I thought I'd just go through really briefly about doing a retreat, because now's the time that we should start doing some 2 or 3 day retreats so that we can still keep this sense of inspiration from Geshe-la. We've got to put something in the tank now, because yes, it's wearing a bit thin. And so ideally 3 days is great, but a weekend would be okay as well. And so I'll set out the formula of which sessions to do. So the first one in the morning is an hour and all the others are 45 minutes. So it's really doable. So one lady asked me, she wanted to actually do a Lam Rim retreat. And so the way that you do Lam Rim retreats is as a deity retreat. You don't kind of do Lam Rim and then later on do deity practice. You do them together. And so if you want to do a Lam Rim retreat, what you do is a Vajrasattva retreat. And in Becoming Vajrasattva, Lama Yeshe says, right at the end of the sadhana, when you absorb Vajrasattva and before you dedicate, that's where you do your Lam Rim meditation. So you've done all the prep of the sadhana, and then you might do, so if it's 45 minutes, then you might do 15 minutes of the Lam Rim meditation that you're doing, going through whatever meditation, say how to develop bodhicitta, do section one for 15 minutes and then dedicate. And that's going to be so much more effective because you've done the preparation of the practice. So what will happen is it'll go into your experience and it'll become realizations rather than just intellect, academic kind of study. So you mightn't think 15 minutes is very long, but actually it's really long for a meditation, especially if you've done all of that priming and then you dedicate. So one lady wanted to do, say, the 6 causes and 1 effect, how to develop bodhicitta. So you could do 15 minutes, you know, first session, 15 minutes on equanimity, second session, everyone's been my mother, and so on, just for 15 minutes all the way through, and you get it done in a weekend. It'd be brilliant. So even like to become an FPMT registered teacher, part of the thing is to do all your Discovering Buddhism exams and to do your hundreds of thousands. And so the reason why of doing the Vajrasattva 100,000 is so that if you're teaching the Lam Rim, that it's not just academic, that you actually have realizations. So that was like to keep prospective FPMT teachers safe, that actually you keep yourself safe, but you're a safe person to be around as well. So, yeah, so if you want to do a Lam Rim retreat, please do it combined with Vajrasattva and it'll be really dynamite. You'll really get places. And then generally when you're going to do a retreat, you want to wake up in retreat. So say if you're doing a weekend, you'd start on the Friday night and you'd just do a session where everything's included in the session, so a long sadhana, but very relaxed, hardly any mantras. And you also do your setup of the boundary. So if it's for a weekend, you decide who you're going to talk to and who you're not and all those things, if you're going to go to the shop or not, hopefully not. So you get really clear about all of that. So then you wake up and retreat. And then you'd finish, say, on the Monday morning so that you get 2 full days in there. And so the last session, the morning session is always devoted to guru yoga of some sort, just generally. And so what we did for our first session was calling the Lama from afar, but any kind of guru yoga practice. And then the middle sessions of the day are for the mantra accumulation and doing whatever Lam Rim. And then the last session of the day is where you offer the torma and do protector prayers. So the torma is offered to front generation Vajrasattva, and it's specifically to hurry along realizations. So it's really important to do that one. And also, in terms of the whole big picture of Tantra, we're supposed to meditate on self-generation, front generation, the deity, but also the mandala, the abode of the deity. So where is that in the practice? Geshe-la might ask. And so it's not there. And so the way to put it in there is when you offer the torma, because you're offering to front generation Vajrasattva in the mandala. And so there it is. Then you've got all the ingredients. And of course, protector prayers every night, because the more virtuous you're going to be, the more obstacles are going to come. That's just how it goes. So you need protector prayers every night to make sure you don't get off track, that people don't get jealous, that you don't have a fit of doubts, all of those things that come up. I mean, Corey Jackson will say it's not that that the distractions are not the problem. It's how we deal with them. And so even falling off the wagon is not the problem. It's how we deal with it. It's got to be in a new way, Dharma way. Yeah. That's right. That's right. And with a re-jigging our attitude, so that we're not coming at it from a worldly attitude, but we get back to really deep inside the core principles. Well, in the sadhana, it had Mahakala as a protector, but that was for Mahakala. So we'd substitute that with six arm Mahakala now. I think that was quite an old sadhana, so I'll put in the six arm Mahakala. But I think if any other protector that you want to do would be fine, Hayagriva. If there's one that you have an initiation of, then do that one. Lama Yeshe put in the four arm Mahakala. That was a really main practice, but then later on, then we all stopped doing that one and do the six arm Mahakala instead.
Is there a reason why it switched from four arm Mahakala to six arm?
Yeah, so there was a time when all of the disharmony about Shugden was coming up, that it was wondering whether four-arm Mahakala was in the practice of Shugden. And because there was an unsure whether four-arm Mahakala was in the entourage of Shugden or not. So for a while then, however many mantras that we said of Mahakala when we do protector prayers, say we did 10 mantras of Mahakala, then we'd say 10 Vajrasattvas at the end. If you did 21 mantras of Mahakala, then you'd say 21 Vajrasattvas. And then after a while, then Lama Zopa Rinpoche just said, just because there's this little smidgen of doubt, better not to do it and to do six arm Mahakala instead. And so, yes, yeah, so then the when we're doing a retreat, so you think of it as you're doing four sessions. So the first session, you're supposed to actually finish before the sun comes up. So that can be quite hard in the tropics. It may mean I've done a retreat like that. I did a Vajjayagini retreat where I was getting up, I kid you not, at 2 a.m. because it was in the height of summer. And to get my first session done before the sun came up was near impossible. That the schedule was absolutely insane, because they say it's best not to meditate at when the sun's rising or setting or midnight or midday, because that's the changeover of the elements and it's where a whole lot of spirits are all active. So it's quite a disturbing kind of time. So they say it's best not to meditate then. So ideally, your first session ends before sun up. Again, just do the best that you can. But that's the one that you call first session. And often, if you're going to do a retreat and you can't do all four sessions, then the session that you do is that first one, so that it's for auspiciousness, because it said you will become enlightened as the dawn, as the sun is rising. Because as what happens within happens without, it all synchronizes. So that's why you do that first session. Stefan's looking forward to it already. He's like, oh yeah. So then second session is from after breakfast to before lunch. You call that second session, but you can have two or three sessions in there. You just have little intermissions, but you just call the whole thing second session. So you could do two or three 45-minute sessions there really easily. And that's where you do a much shorter sadhana and do lots and lots of recitations. Same thing after lunch, third session. You can do it in two or three parts, but you call the whole thing third session. And then the fourth one after the sun has set, and that's where you do the Torma and the protect prayers. And so then the very last day of the retreat, you'd also offer tzog like we did, the lightning fast tzog, the two-verse tzog offering. You'd do that on the final night as well as offer the Tormas, as well as the next morning you'd offer tzog again. Double down. and the final morning you'd spend most of the time on dedications and long life prayers and really multiplying mantras and the whole works. Really simple altar setup. Again, from the Lama Yeshe book, Becoming Vajrasattva, one set of offering bowls. You could have two if you're going to do the self-generation, you'd have two sets of offering bowls. And the three tormas, one big one and two smaller ones. So for us, they can be three jam jars or three jars of honey. So something where they're going to be clean and the ants and the insects aren't going to get in. Jam jars are really nice because they can catch the light, so can honey. So a bigger one for Vajrasattva, smaller one for the protectors, another smaller one for what are called the landlords. So not the one that comes and gets you rent, but the landlords, like the custodians of the land, the ones, the beings that we share our land with, seen and unseen, so that we're living harmoniously and they have everything that they need. And that's it really in terms of the altar. So really easy to do. And then you can have the edited sound files to have all the different visualizations for saying the mantras and the different versions of the sadhanas. I'm hoping people are going to go, oh, I've got a spare weekend here or there. I think I'll just put do not disturb on the door. And
feeling for the student who was brave enough to tell us she'd fallen off the wagon, because you are not alone. There are many of us who have done it. And, you know, and Francesca made a great point of saying that even doing SOG twice a month will help with restoring vows.
Yes, thank you, Francesca. That's right. Doing SOG twice a month on the 10th and 25th of the lunar calendar. We've got one coming up. Yep, we do. So you can do that, or you can just do the short two-verse prayer.
Yep.
And offer a minty.
Right.
Offer it can be anything. It can be a biscuit. No, you put it on your altar. So that's right. Thank you, Francesca. That's a really good point. So when I, after all those years, was brave enough to fess up to Lama Zorob Rinpoche that I'd fallen off the wagon, oh, boy, did that take a lot of bravery. He was really, so he didn't say, there, don't worry. He was really, really gentle, and he just said, it's really important to offer tzog twice a month. Yep. As a way of restoring that guru-disciple relationship, but also the feast of the Dharkas and the Dakinis, it's a way of putting in the energy. Sure. What I said to the other person who'd fallen off the wagon was to just keep that count as a thing in itself and start the count afresh. Because we've got two things, right? One is that we have a commitment for the rest of our life, and the other is we're trying to really get this really concerted effort of the Nongdro. And this is the thing that it's showing us, that we need to put in effort for it to run itself.
Mm.
And so it's been running itself off the inspiration of the guru. And that, you know, it does wear off. I mean, same as coming back from the Bendigo teachings and retreat. You know, for about 3 months, everyone was just, whoa, and then it does, the energy gets smaller and smaller. So I think part of the Nongdro, why Geshe-la wanted us to really go for it this year, is to put that fuel in the tank so that we become our own perpetual motion machine. As a group, it's going to really help us. I think we've got a better chance. The fact that we can fess up and share with each other and not feel so alone, that hardly ever happens.
It makes
a huge difference to have that group energy and support. And yeah, we're going through a process together. We're samsaric beings. Of course we're going to stuff up. That's natural. That's what we're doing, Vajrasattva, in a way. So, you know, And we're supposed to be compassionate
to ourselves
as well. That's right. Yeah, wise and compassionate. And so, of course, there are things that we can do. But, yeah, so I just keep the count really clear, start the count again. I mean, I busted with my doing. I was doing my prostrations. I lost the count. I think I told you the day that I busted was the day that Geshe Tashi Sering and all the nuns came and stayed overnight at Langri Tampa Center. And so I was so involved in getting them all set up, where to sleep and everything, that I forgot to do my prostrations that day. And I woke up in the morning with Geshe-la in the house going, oh, no, I stuffed up. Right when Geshe-la was here of all times. And so I was like at 52,000 or something, so I just started again. I didn't tell Geshe-la. please be patient with any mistakes that I've made at the pujas. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so that prayer of the mistakes that I made, I think I've only ever seen it in pujas. Okay. So I don't know if it's a puja-specific thing, because that's about all the different offerings and the group practice and things like that. But generally at the end of sadhanas, there's always a Vajrasattva mantra to purify any mistakes that you've done in the sadhana, and to stabilize the blessings, because it's a meditation on emptiness.
Yes.
So it means that any realizations that come, any merit that's made, can't be destroyed by anger or anything.
Yes.
It's sealed with emptiness.
Yes.
So here we are, ironically, we're doing a Vajrasattva retreat. And at the end, we're going to do our Vajrasattva mantras. That's right. But, yeah, the continuity, it's not like you've done a bad thing, but it just shows that that connection, it's a living thing and it can degenerate, and so we need to put more energy in to fix it up. And there's all sorts of ways. And so if we have an opportunity to take the initiation again, then make sure that that it's like the same practice, because otherwise you might end up with two Vajrasattva practices to do.
Oh, you mean it's like a Kriya Tantra?
Yeah, you might have a different commitment to do one. It might be a mantra commitment, that would be okay, but it might be a sadhana commitment. So you find out what the commitment's going to be, because you might have a new commitment coming up. That's one thing. And the other thing is to be sure that who you're taking the initiation from is someone that you take as your guru. So there's things to... because I do know someone who took Vajrayogini initiation in another tradition, and they had a different sadhana. So now she has two Vajrayogini sadhanas to do. So you just ask someone who knows. It may or may not be the SPC. It should be the SPC. Ask them. But there was a couple of things. If we're going to do a big long retreat of the setup, so that's if we're going to do like 3 months Vajrasattva or going to, you know, a month or so, to try and start, if you can, on a Tsog day on the 10th or 25th of the Tibetan month, because that's the Dakas and Dakinis day. That's the, in particular, be really auspicious for realizations. And then you put your tormas on the altar. You don't move the tormas during the retreat. Another thing is try not to have animals come into your room, which I thought, gee, that's going to be hard if you've got cats or dogs. But try and if you're going to do like a big, long, serious retreat, 1 month, 3 months, something like that, that you don't have animals come in the room, and you don't put knives in your mouth. So no licking your knife when you're eating. Yeah, it's interesting. So all these things, that the energy must get so very refined that some of these external conditions have a much stronger effect on you. And so you've got to be careful. Because I've read that with a few different sadhana retreats. No knives in the mouth. And don't ever move your seat. So even to clean it, don't move it to shake it out and bring it back. You just clean around it. And you put the kusha grass and the long life grass under your seat, and the swastika. And then once you start the session, then no talking in the session. So we, because we're beginners, we're doing beginners retreats. I'm quite open to have a little sideline, ask a question and have a chat in the session. So on our retreat, Christina, in the middle of the session, asked this fantastic question about the protectors, and it was really good to have that in there. But if you're doing a serious retreat, once you're there in the session, then there's no sideline talking. You just say the sadhana. You do the fire puja at the end, which can be Dorji Kadro. And also you don't have to do precepts. So it's up to you. You don't have to be really full on and do precepts every day. You can just have your main meal at lunch and a light dinner. Many people often find that it's better to have a light dinner because otherwise you're starving and your energy can get quite low and you can get distracted. And if you just have, I think one lady just told me, just have light muffins and jam or something, crumpets and jam or something really light each night, just the same thing. So you're not sitting there thinking, oh, I wonder what's for dinner. You know it's going to be the same thing and it's just going to stop your stomach rumbling and that's it, so it's not a big distraction. But many people think that you need to go all out and do precepts every day and really go hardcore, and Lami, as she was saying, you don't have to go hardcore like that. Middle way.
Miffy, when I was doing the last lot of Nyungnes, it was really, really, really cold when we were doing it up at CI. And I remember we had this, I had this thought, oh, you know, I don't know why it popped into my mind. I thought, look at, oh, you know, imagine being like having a cuddle with my pet dog because she's so nice and warm. And I went, oh my God, if I died right now, I would be reborn in a dog body. That was the first thing that, and I went, nah.
Yeah.
Like, wishing her well, but let's away from thinking about those comforts and back to the practice. So
that's right. Yeah, because your mind gets so kind of subtle and malleable that a little thing like that and whoosh, off you are into sweet pussycat or puppy dog. One retreat that I did in Newmarket, and Eddie was supposed to be my attendant and so cook some lunch for me and whatever, and it was a really hard retreat. I think that was the one where I was getting up at 2 a.m. to try and finish my session before dawn. And so in the setup beforehand, there's in the, for the long retreat, you do the Gektor and the dispelling the interferences, and there's one bit where it says if you let anybody into the retreat space that isn't allowed in there, then their head like splits into 1,000 pieces or something. It's like, it's really full on protection thing. Anyway, and so then I gave Eddie all these instructions, no visitors in the house and whatever. It's a weatherboard house, you know, it's not very soundproof. And it was a three-week retreat. Anyway, I think someone must have come to visit, and he's like, he's always pushing the boundaries, our Eddie, isn't he? So Eddie sat in the kitchen at the back door and the visitor sat on the porch just outside the back door. And then they chatted all afternoon at the top of their voices. And I'm like, I'm sure there's a bit of a visitor in the house. Oh, well, anyway. And then the next day, Eddie had this splitting headache and he was like, nothing he could do to get rid of it. He had this massive headache for about 3 days. And then afterwards I realized, there you go. Eddie got the headache because he's the one that the visitor didn't get the headache, but Mr. Gatekeeper. Anyway, so, yeah, you set up your boundary. You just stick with the program.
Francesca asks, can you explain about looping the mala over the ring finger on the left hand, please, once more?
Oh, yes. So the fingers, everyone remember what the fingers are? The four activities, peace, increase, power, and wrath. So normally we hook the mala over the first finger, which is for peaceful practices, peacefully taming sentient beings. The second one is increase. And the third one is to do with controlling. So sometimes it's called control, sometimes it's called power, and sometimes it's called charm, to be very charming, but you control. So that's the third finger is in particular controlling desire energy, the desire realm. So that's the third finger, and on the left hand, because it's Mother Tantra, so it's left-handed practice. And then the little finger is the wrathful one.
And just on the same thread, like I've been doing that with my Vajrasattvas, but when I do my Om Mani Padme Hums, I've been doing on my right. Would you actually keep it all on the left?
No, when you're doing Om Mani Padme Hum, you on the right hand side on the first finger, because that's the practice. Yep. So it's practice specific. All is not lost if we're falling off the wagon to keep saying our mantras. And I noticed my own energy kind of went down. So what I've you know, our commitment is to recite the mantra minimum once, but at least 21. So every morning I just belt it out loud. And, you know, so my practice might fluctuate, and I might feel like sometimes I'm just going blah, 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 and my mind's all over the place. But at the very minimum, I just recite it, even if my mind is blah, 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 because that keeps me held in there. And once you're held there, then you can start working, making it quality. So really try, it's the continuity. How we feel about it will go up and down. So what keeps us stable is just doing it anyway. So, but we get attached to, oh, I just want to do it well, and if I can't do it well, then I won't do it. That's the wrong way. You just do it anyway. And so that actually is, it rewires your brain. It's a neurological thing. It's not how you feel about the thing that matters. It's how you respond. So how you respond is you just say the mantras every day, and how you feel about it goes up, great, don't get too excited. Goes down, great, don't get too just depressed. And eventually we will create our own equilibrium. But it's only through just holding ourselves in there with the discipline of it. Just claim it back up on that wagon. And, you know, I also think protective prayers are really good for helping as well, because they bring the energy back home again and back aligned. So kind of some protective prayers as well to just dispel all of those distractions. And coming along tonight, fantastic. Well done, everybody. We're back on.